Intro.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on-chain and in graffiti, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And I say graffiti for a reason, because we have on Xerox Maki and Glovin from Hieroglyphs. We get on what's in store, what's going on in the graffiti, and then some. Kit, what do you think of this one?
Dude, like, I didn't realize what they were building. I thought it was just another NFT thingy-majiggy, but this is, like, such deep meaning. I feel like a revolutionist, you know, participating in this.
Yeah, you know, and there's one word I want people to keep in mind: distribution. People, just think about it. It's all about distribution in the end. And how are these hieroglyphs being distributed, and how these look different, you know, use cases, whether it's meme coins or NFTs or whatever they have in store in the future. It's all about distribution. It's all about fair launch. It's all about going back to the ethos about, like, what made crypto great, which is the little guy having his chance of making it big. So we're going to get into this one. But before we do, make sure you go ahead and subscribe. Hit that bell button below. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Give us a like. Make sure you follow us on all our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can go ahead, subscribe to flywheeldefi.com for all the latest updates. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K. And this time around, we have an incredible honor to have on Xerox Maki and Glovin, who they're going to go deep into hieroglyphs, which has been the talk of the town. Quite the ambitious project we have here, guys. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, Maki, I can, you know, when we were out in the desert in Dubai, I think it must have been like a year and a half ago. Was this something you've been planning? Was this something on your mind then? Or, like, when did this, like, come about? It feels like just yesterday we were just, like, doom bugging and shit.
Yeah, so Inception story is pretty cool, actually. We were working on, actually, some NFT finance protocol. Me, Glovin, a few other devs and whatnot. And ultimately, we went to Taiwan. We had a listening party with PleaserDAO. And ultimately, the greatest thing about PleaserDAO is I think the members that are involved are all kind of extremely top-tier individual in cryptos. And, you know, it's just a certain empathy of being over there while, you know, listening to Wu-Tang Clan unreleased album was, I think, you know, kind of set us on a mission. And this mission kind of blossomed into Hieroglyph.
So, what is the mission?
Yeah, the mission is to basically, like, incentivize, holders of ETH to run solo validators and, you know, make sure that people are not too lazy in, you know, decentralizing this network, which we believe is one of the beauty of Ethereum, where, you know, everyone can have consumer grade hardware and basically, like, run the network in a very decentralized manner. So that's kind of the objectives or what we want to incentivize. So
why don't you think people have been historically incentivized or motivated to run their own solo validators? Is it just too easy to go and put in an LST or is it something else?
Well, there's multiple reasons, I think. And even myself, I'm, you know, seed investor in some of these liquid staking protocol. I have nothing against them per se. I think the capital efficiency is amazing with these protocol. For someone that is homeless like myself, I cannot run hardware at home and, you know, like, always monitoring it, or else some people don't have the technical capabilities of running these kind of, you know, the hardware requirements and tech requirements and whatnot. And I do think LSDs have a very great role in our ecosystem. The problem is we are seeing kind of, I don't want to say a capture, I don't want to say, you know, super majority in a few operators or, you know, like LSDs themselves, but we're just seeing kind of, not, I would say, what Ethereum stands for, I guess. We are taking the easy path. We're taking the lazy path. It would probably have been worse if the ETF that just got approved would have, you know, allowed staking. That would have been even worse, I think, for solo stakers and basically like the little guys. So I think that's why. And again, like composability in DeFi, which is enabled via LSD, is also massive. So yeah, tons of reasons. I do like to see kind of innovation in LSD. Like I think what Stakewise is doing, where, you know, you can actually run a validator and have a liquid equivalent. I love to see DVT being pushed by Lido, for example. I think mini pools from Rocket Pools have been amazing for, like, you know, people that have less means. So ultimately, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, LSDs are bad and it's evil and LRTs are so bad and whatnot. No, I'm just, I think we just need to have a balance. And Hieroglyph is what we're trying to do. We're trying to incentivize it in a way that is beyond 3, 4, 7% when you're staking. And that's kind of, and the only way to do so is via, like, some creative means. So that's why we built Hieroglyph. And, you know, I think it's a very, I guess our tagline should be, it's a 60 IQ protocol with 120 IQ ramifications. Let's maybe dive in. Let's explain what it means. Yeah.
Yeah. What does that mean? What is Hieroglyphs? What's going on? How does it work? And, like, how can people benefit from it?
Right. I'm not sure if I should mention Wu was kind of sitting at the table when we had this idea, or, you know, this kind of whiteboard jamming session. Glovin, which is in the call with us, was present. He's a co-author of the white paper and basically, like, helped design all of this. We also had Manny Recon Cruz that was there, which is basically, like, over at Spot Finance, and Buttonwood, which is, you know, like, kind of a R&D lab for DeFi primitives. He was also an advisor at Ampleforth, if everyone remember, like, rebasing tokens. Like
the OG rebasing.
Yeah, token, the OG rebasing without the Ponzu sauce. And then, yeah, we had, like, all these great minds. We had Suzu was there, actually. We had Mr. Block from Taiwan. There's a bunch of folks just, you know, gathered in this cramped room and just, like, basically, like, ideating for 4 hours straight. And what happened is we took a lot of inspiration from what Runes was doing, which was kind of the talk of the town. Just to be very honest, like, I don't have a deep kind of, I would say, acknowledgement.
A deep understanding of Runes?
Yeah, just 1 second.
Yeah.
But yeah, someone just needs to take their stuff, yeah. So anyways, I don't have a deep understanding of Runes per se. Seakeeper from Saffron Finance is actually the one that put it on my radar after E Denver. So after E Denver, I was asking a bunch of my friends what was popping off and what was happening over there. Well, he told me very frankly, Runes and Bitcoin layer twos were the talk of the town. And to me, that was kind of catastrophic, you know, like I was a little bit in shambles. Like, how come the dinosaurs are coming back in an ETH event? What is happening here? And, you know, like, mainly I think it was driven by, you know, of course, like, Bitcoin had all this kind of traction with the ETF and a bunch of other stuff happening. So that's why everything was looking bright. But so I started to dig a little bit. Didn't really understand it, to be honest. Kind of just stayed in the back of my mind all this time, just on the back, you know, back process. And at some point, we started to kind of dive into this and think, like, well, where can we apply runes and for ETH. Well, what is the equivalent of this? I have been very critical of ordinals, inscriptions, mainly because I feel this is a virus or cancer for blockchains. For Bitcoin, it's perfect because, well, they're not able to sell their block space, their real estate. But for Ethereum, where we are, at capacity, and so usually mm-hmm. We have not enough blocks and we have too much people trying to do transaction. And that's why we started to have all these layer twos and, scaling solutions to help and alleviate this kind of issue. So we started to think about this and I remembered about in E2, we have this very kind of peculiar graffiti field that every validator is running. So if you open Etherscan, click on a block right now, you will be able to see the graffiti of the block proposer. What does it do? What is it? It is only 32 characters that are whatever the validator wants to say. Most of them usually are basically like saying which LSD or staking company or validator or custodian is basically validating with. So for example, Stakefish, mine this block. That's kind of how things are being at the moment used. So we said, well, what if we put basically like some character in there, Charabia, just uneligible stuff, things that don't make any sense, but we are able to decode it. Maybe Glovin, if you want to dive in here and maybe explain in a little bit in detail how do we kind of the transcoder and everything is working or the way we were ideating this, that would be very cool.
Yeah, Glovin, sorry, before you get started, just for my non-technical understanding, is that graffiti line the same when you see a exploit or hack event and then somebody sends a message to the hacker and be like, hey, don't use USDT, you'll get blocked? Is that the same field?
This is different.
Oh, okay.
This is really on the bug proposal. But Glovin, please dive in. I think you are able to explain.
Yes, Glovin, dive in.
So yeah, basically those graffiti itself does not mean anything. So just like how Satoshis or pieces of those Bitcoins mean nothing without those fetching mechanism or what's on top of like Bitcoin. So there has to be some kind of encoder and there has to be the rules of the syntax to be added to those UTXO input field and order. So transcoder and encoder is something equivalent to that in the context of ordinals in Heroku's. So transcoder is it's what defines like the set of rules in terms of the syntax to be added to the graffiti. So for example, before you leave the ticker of the token you want to mine with those Heroku's blocks, you have to add sign before your ticker. For chains, you have to add a hashtag or something like that. So that's what transcoder. That's like the kind of role that transcoder serves. And encoder is what actually listens to every single block, every single attestations to see if the validators who are participating has left some kind of graffiti according to the syntax rule that we have defined in the transcoder. Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. And if you allow me to go further on like distinctions between ordinals and Heroku, since many people are confusing and many people consider us to be the Ethereum equivalent of ordinals.
That was
actually
going to be one of my questions. Like, what are the differences?
So yeah, to go deep into that, I guess there are three main reasons why we referred ordinals and inscriptions in the white paper. So first, the context of the white paper is highlighting that any storage space on top of this immutable ledger, this innovation is valuable. So while I'm not like a very expert on ordinals, I understand that they initially utilized a space called the input field in UTXO as a BRC20 token only ledger. So in our case, we're utilizing this record space known as graffiti, which was introduced when E2 was introduced. So another similarity would be that tokens being launched in Heroglyphs are also designed to be fair, as fair as ordinals. I think Maki's going to cover this in greater detail later on. Anyway, so moving on to the next one, which is my favorite aspect, is that people were able to contribute to the community and ecosystem as a whole while enjoying themselves and engaging with the meme without necessarily understanding all the details of how it works. So there was significant discourse within the Bitcoin community to ensure that miners were adequately incentivized to continue their work even after the Bitcoin emission schedule ended. So, and this buzz around this concept actually boosted the number of Bitcoin transactions and improved miner profitability. So I'm not certain if this was the developer's intention within Ordinals, but it seems to be the direction where we're heading. So people don't necessarily have to understand every single details. They just enjoy the meme while they're contributing to the ecosystem, whether they recognize or not. And that's the beauty of like what we're trying to build. Even if you do not fully grasp the details or choose not to engage deeply, or even if you don't want to understand it in the first place, you're actually contributing to what makes the ecosystem more decentralized, more what makes the ecosystem better, whether directly or indirectly. And one clear distinction that I want to draw that would be, unlike other inscription tokens, including Bitcoin's BRC20, which has no utility, which is, in my opinion, not a token that we have used to see, we are extension of ERC20, so it can open up various possibilities that anything could be built on top of ERC20. And the most significant aspect, which is, I think, that's something that we'll have to cover later on, is that it does not exert any pressure on the base layer. Just as Maki mentioned, that those inscriptions actually pose a lot of pressure onto the DA layer and the ecosystem itself. It spams a lot, but for us, it does not exert any pressure on the base layer.
And if I can add here, if we can just specify, like, graffitis are ephemeral. They're off-chain. They are something that is not put in the block. It is not on-chain. So
no gas.
Yeah.
No gas. Just,
exactly. No gas. But, I mean, there is just, like, we're not bloating the state further. Mm-hmm. And that's a beauty because, you know, like, we don't need to do all these shenanigans, like, on Bitcoin. We can just use, you know, a contract where you can claim these token whatever you want. And, you know, like that's just, and it's going to be on layer two either. Like it doesn't have to be on mainnet and whatnot. And that's really what we wanted to do. We wanted to do something that is layer two forward. We wanted to kind of showcase what is possible on ETH. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, we're using, you know, messaging protocol to basically like make sure that wherever you are, as long as it's at the moment EVM, you can claim your tokens. In the future, maybe, who knows, this is going to be on, you know, SVM is going to be on MoveVM, it's going to be on all of them, Cosmos potentially. But at the moment, we're, you know, EVM centric to claim. The constants is that this is Ethereum miners, complete validators that are actually producing these tokens. And that's where, you know, like I want people that are maybe like from back in the days, a little bit more OGs or else, if you remember the concept of merge mining. That is very important. Yes. So if you have the same hashing algo. Yeah, exactly. If you have like the same hash coin. There you go. Doge and Litecoin. What a beautiful combo. We love this. That. We love the Doge. You could also mine, I think it was XMR. So Monero and Pirate Coin, if I remember. There's a bunch of XMR kind of merge mining coins that existed back in the days. And that's kind of what we are recreating with Hieroglyph. You will be able to merge mine with your soul validator. Not one, not two, but up to, I think it's 28 or 26 tokens at the same time if you are optimizing to the absolute, you know, maximum, which is, you know, by using kind of aliases, single char, proxy and whatnot. One thing that is very important. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, no, I love the merge mining comparison because I remember when I first learned about it, for like people listening that don't know what merge mining is, you're basically mining two coins at once. So with Litecoin and Dogecoin, before Dogecoin had its own mining, but in 2015 or 2016 or whenever, when it became apparent that it having its mining on its own wasn't enough, it decided to basically like borrow Litecoin's mining and security to mine Dogecoin. And that's, and so you're mining in parallel. And when you said like, oh, hieroglyphs, you're basically mining in parallel between Ethereum and all these different hieroglyph tokens. And soon you said it would be up to 28 tokens. I find that really cool. Did I explain that right?
Yes, that's correct. And you know, this brings me to kind of another side of hieroglyph. So there's, to me personally, I think there's two sides to it. Two main theme, I would say. So there's this kind of distribution thing that we're saying about the merge mining and whatnot. And then someone, you know, most of the people will ask me, well, like, why would we buy these tokens? What's the incentives here? What's happening? So there's one thing that we lost with POS, and I think that is very unfortunate. The beauty of POW is that anyone can just spin up some hardware and just come and mine the token, the coin. It's not even a token, it's a coin. They can just basically, like, you know, there's an emission schedule, there's a difficulty, there you go. Like, everyone, it's a race. With POS, it's very different. It's more basically a money game, I would say, where, you know, like, the rich get richer and whatnot. Like, it's a little bit, it's not easy. But with Hieroglyph, anyone can basically like spin a validator. And for now, it's very expensive and the cost is very prohibitive. But we're going to come at this later. We are able to make the accessibility way lower. There's a little kind of, we found a way. But regardless, anyone can just spin up a validator and mine these token. For example, let's take a bit token. Please give me an example. What's your favorite meme coin, Kit, or what do you? What's okay. Your ticker? Your favorite ticker?
Let's do Boden.
Okay, Boden. So if Boden, let's say, was on Hieroglyph, and we are saying there's 100 token every single block. If there's one validator with the ticker Boden and their graffiti, he's gonna get all the tokens. But if next block, there's 100 people, potentially like everyone would get one Boden. If there's 10,000 validator, you know, do you see what's happening here with the difficulty basically and the emission? You could say after 50 blocks, the emission is cut in half. You can go with, you know, time. It is very trivial to build on top of the core protocol. All these mechanics are possible. You could even, you know, another use case potentially could be like every single validator that have a graffiti, you know, will whitelist them to mint a special NFT. We have created some games on top of this. You can basically like use a randomizer, you know, like Chainlink VRF or basically like randomizer.ai on Arbitrum. You can just say, well, give me a number between 0 and 1,000. If you get the number, you know, which we basically take on chain, and so, you know, we have a snapshot before and whatnot of all the graffiti. If you guess the right number, you will get, you know, the price money. This is all possible on Hieroglyph, on the core protocol, from day one. It's available. And this is what, you know, like phase three is going to be all about. I don't want to dive more into kind of what's coming. But that's kind of, you know, the developer tooling. Everyone knows pom.fun here, of course. But, you know, you are able to use pom.fun to distribute the token via Hieroglyph. And that is beauty to us. This is beautiful. And that brings us to the fair aspect. Like the fact that there can be no pre-mined. The fact that we can start a ERC token at zero supply. And instead of enabling distribution via like LP pools with pool two or pool one with just asset, we can say, well, like, guess what? If you are securing the network, we will basically incentivize you. We will give you this token. And, you know, like, I think that's really like what I would call an immaculate token, like similar to like the immaculate conception. It doesn't get better than this, sir. And to me, that's fascinating. I don't know about you guys, but...
Yeah. You know what this kind of goes, almost fits the current regime and sentiment of low float, high FDV? like the hate for that. Starts at zero. And this is like the exact other side of the spectrum. It's like as fair as can be, and not only that, it's incentivizing the right thing, right? You want a more complete validators to come on and help the security of the
If it starts at zero, like, okay, let's say if it starts at zero a token, let's say the supply is like 1 million and there's no pre-mine and everybody has a fair chance to mine it. It's technically, and let's say there's a, like 1,000 minted each or like 100 minted each block. Is that technically like low float like to start? But the thing is, yeah, it is low float to start, but because there's no pre-mine, go ahead.
You can in theory do a pre-mint. But this pre-mint could be directed into like a liquidity pool, could be directed towards like a special kind of POAP holders, could be towards public goods, could be NFTs, could be anything. Really, like you are like, as I would say, like the thicker creator or owner or token creator, you are the one deciding all these parameters. And I think the fairer you are, and you know, like with the best intentions, the more people will value it. The beauty of this is that everything is on chain. If you are yourself pre-minting or pre-mining X amount of token, we will all see it on chain. Where the problem is with the current meme coins, what I'm seeing and what I don't like necessarily, is I have absolutely no idea who is sniping their own token. Is these LP like kind of really burnt or locked or not? I mean, locking, it's easy to verify, but really like the manipulation of supply at launch is very difficult to assess. Like you really need to dig into this because people are using tons of bots, tons of different wallets and whatnot. It is, obscurity. And to us, like, I think participants in the ecosystem, that doesn't sound good. That is not really, for all the Pepe that we've seen, all the Whiff, all the Boden, all the Bode or whatnot, there's like 600,000 tokens on Pump.fun that nobody has heard of that has been rugged or whatnot.
600,000?
I think cumulative, I think that's where we're at. Last time I looked at the Dune dashboard, that's a lot of tokens. And by the way, like Aylan, like the Pump.fun founder.
Yeah.
Guys, get your fucking decks up and running already. Stop following this shit on Radium. But anyways, regardless.
You heard it here, Aylan. Get your shit together. Friend of the show. We love him.
But regardless, yeah. So that's kind of the beauty with Hieroglyph. The fair aspect of it, purity, and the fact that this is enabling complete validators. We can talk about accessibility if you guys want, real quick.
I wanted to get into one part of the white paper that really spoke to me. It said Ethereum validation creates two types of value: block rewards and information privileges. I think everybody's familiar with block rewards. You get rewarded for securing the network. And that's where we have all the LSTs and whatnot. But no one looked at information privileges until Hieroglyphs came along. And there's in the white paper, you said graffiti is the ultimate symbol of information privilege. Can we go into how does Hieroglyphs turn information privileges into value? And this whole, where do you see this going from there?
Please, Glovin, go at it.
So, yeah, in the context of white paper, the information privilege mentioned in this context was originally about the order flow. So, MEV and things like that. In fact, I don't want to go too deeply technical into this, but I'll just give you very high level overview on our approach on the decentralization of validators and whatnot. Yeah, PBS was created to address that. And just like economic partial validators have no say over the block building process because they delegate all of those technical complexities as well as the powers regarding the validation process. Validators post PBS, if they're connected to MEV Boost Relay, and it indeed offloads many of the technical complexities of extracting MEVs and indeed democratize it. But, it's a bit concentrated into few hands, like few builders, but that does not mean we should encourage validators to turn off their MEV boost relay because it just concentrates the power again to the few validators. So as you dig deeper into this context, I can like list thousand different layers of problems. There are obviously layers of issues. We indeed need more builders, obviously more decentralization and incentivization of relays, whether that being enshrining it within the protocol or having another layer on top to solve the issue, but not too sure if it's within the scope of problem we're trying to solve at the moment. So to give you a little more context for my thinking before I talk about what follows, I really like to divide problems into urgency and importance. So when I think about problems, I usually think of them in terms of this 2x2 metrics. So problems like MEV is on the urgency side of the table. It could not be knocking on the door tomorrow. It's something tangible. It's got immediate economic stakes. However, we'll eventually have to come back to solve this important issue of increasing the number and diversity of the validators, which are the final decision makers. Even the decisions regarding, are they going to turn on the MEV boost or not? So, and if we even go more extreme, decentralizing the consensus layer of Ethereum and decentralizing the validators who are the ones who decide the actual direction of Ethereum. So I guess those kind of problems, decentralizing the validator dynamics itself, it's what falls under the importance category. So I guess that's where we're actually heading towards at the moment. And yeah, I think I'll have a chance to cover this later on. Graffiti as a symbol of the power that we're giving away when we're delegating to liquid staking providers. I guess that's going to be another topic too.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, let's get into hieroglyphs a bit more. Earlier, you talked about encoding and translating, and this is a real core part about how the protocol works. Can we go into what's going on here? And, you know, yeah, go ahead, Maki.
So I think the easiest way to explain it is think of ENS. Every single char in a graffiti resolve to a contract, it resolve to a proxy, and in this contract any single logic can happen, whether that is to disperse a token, whether that is to give you an NFT, whether that is to return a value, whether that is anything can be done with these kind of contracts. And there is 32 of these resolving proxies in every single graffiti. The encoder, translator, and whatnot, like, we are using something on the side to basically like read what you got, check what's happening, and then basically like fetching it and whatnot. That's really what's happening in the back per se. And the only way to actually assess, and we can see the block builder graffiti, but every single other people at the moment, basically like attesting, you know, verifying what the block builder did and whatnot, we cannot fetch on chain. That is not possible. So we need to rely on, you know, third parties. At the moment, we're using Gelato Network to basically like fetch this information.
Shout out to Omar and Lewis, friends of the show.
And then we basically like, give medals, which are off-chain points to keep track of who has been attestating based on the uptime and whatnot. What happened is once you reach a certain amount of medals, you are able to redeem it for badges, which are soulbound token. This remains with you. This is not core to, I mean, this is core to the protocol, but then like what's happening with the badges is, you know, inherently like part of the coordination game that we can talk about later. But regardless, with the soulbound token, you're able to basically like redeem like incentives. You're able to do like a bunch of things. But this is really part of the coordination game. Should we dive in the coordination game now?
Yeah.
Or
Just, so I can kind of group all this together, is this 28 char, right? 28 character. And is the encoder and the translator part of these 32?
We read basically like with a special syntax. Okay, so you've put hashtag kit. Perfect. That's one token. Amazing. Okay, you have a Coma, right? Okay, that's a, you have Coma Maki, perfect. Two tokens, amazing, beautiful. At, this is your wallet. This resolve to where this should be claimed. Okay, this should be claimed. It can okay. be an ENS, a cluster, could be just a wallet. And this you need to register it. That's called the ID. And then at the very end, you have a flag. Where are you going to claim said token on this wallet? Is it going to be on Optimism, Arbitrum? Is it going to be on Phantom, Avalanche, etc.? That's kind of how this is being interpreted, and how this behave. This is why you need this syntax. It's just for giving us flags for us. If you are familiar with command line, CLI, whatnot, this is, or, you know, rejects is the same exact thing, to be honest. It is very simple. That's why I say, you know, it's a 60 IQ protocol. It is very simple in to build. It has some very cool ramification, but it's in theory quite simple.
I love that breakdown. Literally, I think we can, you know, people can totally make a clip out of that and understand how that formulates into the encoder to kind of like decode that. And then the translator then, I guess, pings all the smart contract that is needed to execute that single line that you had just said, right?
You got it. There you go.
Beautiful. Okay, there now let's go on to IQ. The 120 IQ, because that's fairly easy. Instructions, something to encode it, something to understand it, something to activate it, and then now is the coordination game, which is the 120 IQ portion. Let's get into that.
So one thing that I'm seeing quite often with financiers, VC, or developers is, this is all cool, Mackie, but how are you going to make it interesting or find PMF or what's your GTM, go to market? How are you going to get this out there? That's what everyone wants to know. And the truth is, you know, some people often refer to this motto, like, build it and they will come. You couldn't be more further away from the truth. You need to actually push it, push the protocol to its limit to actually show what is possible. And then people will get inspired. Then people will want to play with this. Then people will want to ape and whatnot. So what we decided to do is we've done a breakdown in five phases for Hieroglyph. Right now we're in phase two. We're not fully launched, unfortunately. There's been kind of hiccups, but phase one was very simple. You could mint keys. Why do we need keys? I will kind of talk about the Sybil aspect of complete validator and, you know, whatnot very briefly, but we, like, one of the first question everyone is asking me always is, how do you know if the validator is a human or, you know, a solo validator? Well, I can't. It's not possible. Like, I will be very honest with you. This is way above my pay grade. I don't know how to solve, like, Cybling. If I was, I would have some orb somewhere and command, like, a 10 billion plus valuation. Truth is, I'm not there. So what we've decided to do is, very naively, said, well, if the solve validator, you know, the validator, the complete validator, has an EOA, has the retro address, well, we can assume that this is not a custodian. We can assume that this is not an LSD, unless, you know, this is a very, very shady one.
Trust me, bro, so, LSD.
There you go. And then so we decided to, you know, like, say, well, what if, you know, we do this? Everything has cons, pros and cons. The cons is, this is incentivizing a very bad security. So multi-sigs are excluded. All right. Went back to the drafting table. Well, like, if we are to support smart contracts, then what if, you know, there is like a pull app inside? What if there is something else, and so on and so on, NFTs potentially? We decided to go for keys. So just the NFT that you buy, that you keep in your validator or your ID, and that will basically act as a, I don't want to say 2FA, but let's use this analogy just for the sake of the explanation. So you have a key in your validator. You need to, you know, no LSD out there will start to buy keys. Like, I cannot believe it. If they do, if they're like that degen, god damn it. Like, that's really a success, you know? And then you need to actually buy an ID. So you need to identify your validator or you want. Similar to register like an ENS. You just need to, like, say, well, this is my validator discuss 0.1 ETH. And you know, like if someone has 10 validators, it's going to cost a little bit. This represents like around like a month of reward for a 32 ETH validator at the moment, which is not nothing per se. Regardless, we launched with this kind of phase one. We got like over 23,000 minters, which was, you know, very successful. We raised like around 6 million. And ultimately, we think, great. PMF is achieved. You know, we've got the word is on the street. Amazing. But on the other end, there's a bad truth is we saw an entity starting to farm with 3,000 validator. And, you know, like then that was like, oh, there you go. We found it. Some people are trying to basically like break or exploit kind of the system. And, you know, like that's where we started to add like basically like an entry queue. We started to add like way more kind of filtering and whatnot to the system. And that's why we had to kind of push back the launch of V2. V2 is very simple. Every single keys that everyone minted is required to mine these meme coins. So we have 14 meme coins, one for each chain in many cases. It's going to basically like, I think crypto is very tribalism ecosystem. So I know everyone has their tribe. Everyone, you know, one prefer Polygon, the other one prefer Avalanche, the other one prefer Mode, someone prefer Frax style, etc. The beauty of here, what we've tried to concoct is just like do a mascot for each of these ecosystems and see what will happen. Are we going to see a rally where everyone in, for example, what's your favorite chain, Dave?
You mean, I love the Bear Chain boys.
The Bear Chain, well, like, okay, so Bear Chain is the exception because they're not launched yet, so they're going to be a pre-launch token.
Let's do Fractal.
All right, let's do Fractal. So shout out to Sam Kazamian, probably listening. And by the way, so Fractal launch, perfect. We have a meme coin. Do you remember Bonk on Solana?
Yeah. So,
do you remember Bonk?
Mm-hmm. Yep, beauty. Of course.
What happened with Bonk?
It basically
there's
unified.
A lot of iterations with it.
It's like, yeah, exactly. There you go. It brought the ecosystem back. I felt like it was like everyone just went behind it and was like, you know, we're coming back from this SBF situation. Yeah.
And to me, you know, like Bonk is really one of these kind of success story for an ecosystem where, you know, everyone discarded basically like what was happening over there on Solana. Like, oh, it's dead. Like, you know, this it was kind of SBF chain. Whatever. I think people didn't understand how resilient their developer community was. And to be honest, like I've been very impressed with the Solana folks. But regardless, so Bonk acted as an electrocute to all these kind of devs to say like, hey, it's time to collaborate. It's time to push this.
It's time to build.
There you go. It's time to build.
Together. Build together. So,
like, and so that's kind of what we're trying to achieve here. It's like, oh, everyone was bearish on ETH and whatnot. And we were thinking like, what can we do to basically unite everyone? And that's kind of our solution. Is it going to work? Is it going to be the next Swift or Pepe? I don't think so. Maybe if we're very lucky, who knows? But one of the things that is really great is every single one of these meme coins is different. Different in name, different in supply, different in emission schedule, different in pre-mint, different in the initial liquidity being seeded. So is it going to be like the greatest experiment for like all these devs, they will be able to see all these data points and basically like see what works and what doesn't. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a game. That's the goal of it. It's a coordination game.
Yeah,
so that's for phase two.
I remember when these NFTs first came out and Hieroglyphs first came out, I was actually like away on a bachelor party in Puerto Rico and I saw this and I was like, I need to like mint this right now. I saw Maki. I saw something new. I just was like, all right, let me left curve this. And I just minted a bunch. And now you're saying it's these NFTs are the keys to a game, an experiment around coordinating different communities. And basically, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so we disseminated a lot of clues and, you know, like there's many phase coming up and whatnot. And the truth is we're some of the feedback is a lot of people are pissed that actually you need these keys, you need a validator. And to us, like that was very important that, you know, actually like we incentivize folks that have like, E to run them. And like, all right, like, it's time to order the fucking dApp node, you know? That's what we wanted to do.
This sounds like the most Ethereum aligned projects since Eigenlayer.
Stop it, dude.
You know, at first, I thought it was the ETH ETF that pumped Ethereum, but clearly it was Hieroglyphs that, you know, that's
why ETH is. I love the barbell here. You have like one side is the ETH ETF, which was just approved today, came out of like absolutely nowhere. And you can't get more institutional than that. And then you have the other side, which is running a solo validator with Hieroglyphs and participating in this game, like bringing back this fair launch ethos that defined crypto before, whether it was with DeFi Summer and even the beginnings of Bitcoin. And I think that's your goal here. It's just to like, you know, make crypto fun again, like bring back that spirit again that we like lost.
There you go. So, you know, if some people know me, some people don't know me, maybe listening to the podcast, but that's kind of where my my uprising kind of came, right? It's when all these fair launch were happening. This is when I kind of had the calling. I was like, well, this is it. This is time. I need to kind of get involved because, well, otherwise, like, it's just going to be a big pile of VC shit. And ultimately, well, like, we saw, like, Yearn coming out of this, we saw Sushi coming out of this, you know, Yam, Pickle Finance, bunch of other, you know, the food tokens. And, you know, like, right. I think NFTs did great things too, and the culture, we're gonna have some stuff for them too. But just one little thing I want to mention is Complete Validator is really our goal, initial goal, but we're not forgetting about mini pools on Rocket Pools. We're not forgetting about folks who wants to use like DVTs, and ultimately, like, I think people are gonna wake up to potentially like finally get their validators running with Gnosis Chain. Why? Because it takes, you know, I think it's sub $1,000 right now to get their validator running on Gnosis Chain, and this is probably gonna be one of the avenue. Is it gonna have all the incentives identical to Complete Validator? I don't think so. We're going to try to make everyone happy and make sure you guys didn't get rugged if you minted 30 plus keys. So we'll see what happens there. But ultimately, that's the goal here, to make sure everyone is kind of wake up, you know, stop being lazy and just run this hardware infrastructure that is so beautiful and makes this blockchain happen or reality.
Are you running hardware right now?
Myself?
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, I can't. I can't at the moment. I want you guys to do it for me.
Yeah. No, see, Maki created the coronation game. So instead of him running one machine, he's going to incentivize 23,000 keys to run 23,000 machines.
Tens of thousands of machines.
Big brain.
I cannot pre-mint it. I cannot pre-mine it. See? It's purity.
You know, now, I guess... What's so great about this is you're effectively almost weaponizing meme coins for good. And if people want to speculate on these meme coins, they're going to have to do good for the network by, you know, running a complete validator. And then for folks that cannot run a validator, whether it be, you know, technical or economic reasons, they can, you know, have mini pools. I think Stakehouse was something that you had also mentioned. And there are like ways for you to get access to it. But nonetheless, it is incentivizing the right thing, which are more diverse and smaller, you know, stake at home folks. So I really like that. And, you know, you also tied in so many ecosystems, 14 of them, largely most of them are EVM as well too. And then now you're able to showcase, like, even though everyone has a different L2, we're still all kind of unified under this one thing, because at the end of the day, you settle onto ETH and you need a complete validator to basically, you know, accept your stake proofs. And I think that's such a beautiful vision. Now, can we get into the degeneracy side of things? Okay, like, let's get into how are you thinking these complete validators will be motivated? And talk about the liquidity pools, right? Because you guys raised $6 million, but 98% of it goes to something and 2% goes to something. Could you kind of walk us through the degeneracy side?
So basically, like, any of the proceeds from the NFTs, the keys, are not going into our pocket, or we're not keeping it at all. 98% will go on various liquidity pools across all these four, you know, chains and networks. We have two I think I would say three type of tokens. So first one is, let's call them the pre-mints. So what we've been seeing is a very kind of unique phenomenon in community building over the past, I want to say a year at least. We are seeing massive activation of, you know, Parachain community, Monad community, which don't have a token, don't have a chain live yet. Well, they're still like the talk of the town. They're everywhere. And they're very active community members. To me, this is great. But we wanted to do something for them. We wanted to make sure that, you know, we could have prime real estate and have the first meme coin on these networks. We decided to launch them preemptively. For some of the people that are a little bit older, if you remember EOS, where did EOS launch?
Ethereum.
They launched on Ethereum. There you have it.
For 365 days, right?
Yep. There you go. The infinite ICO. So regardless, Molandak, which is basically like one of the most adorable mascots for Monad, is going to be launching first on Layer 2, and then basically all the LP will be transferred over there.
I have the worst story with EOS, and when it was on Ethereum and it was migrating, I lost my private key. And so I couldn't, it was awful. And it took me like a year because I was the only one that lost their key to like get it onto actual EOS. And by that time, it was down 90%. So absolute pain.
The Dave tax.
The Dave tax. So be careful. Just make sure you copy and paste your private key.
Yep. So
continue.
So basically, we have Monad, we have Parachain, the same principle. So basically, like, the liquidity pool is going to be moving on their mainnet whenever this is happening. For other tokens, you know, there's like 10 of them. They're just going to be like deployed on various DEXs. I have a lot of friends in the communities. I've been supporters of, you know, all these builders. And so we decided to deploy on multiple of these, you know, basically like DEXs, chains and whatnot. So we also going to have, I think there's two tokens that are like tokenless. We'll give more detail on this at launch and whatnot. Like, they're not forgotten. Don't worry about this. We also have 2% of all the proceeds going to public goods. And this is something very dear to my heart because something that inspired me to make this, you know, Euroglyph project was the blog post about meme coins by Vitalik, right? I think everyone read it. Everyone kind of was like, well, Lenny, what are we going to do with this? What is happening? Everything is shifting into like a glorified casino. Is this really what we're here for and whatnot? I'm not. And by the way, meme coins are just a Trojan horse for what we really want to do with Euroglyph. Like, it's just, if this is the meta, like, well, I'm not going to put my head in the sand and just like do nothing. I'm not going to sit on my hands, say, this is disgusting, I don't want to touch it. And a lot of people in the Ethereum community feel that way, I think. And that's why we've not been doing anything to basically like, do they, you know, counterbalance what is happening on all these degenerate chains. So 2% is going to Protocol Guild, which is basically like the team building the clients for E2 and basically all this goodness that we're using. So 1% is Protocol Guild, 1% is Public Spaces. So you're seeing today, like, I have this camera on. It's not something that I do very often. This is a public good space, hacker space. We have right now, like, basically, like, I think a list of 7 or 8 of these public spaces around the world where, you know, like, the only requirement is literally, like, you're not a for-profit or a non-profit, we don't care. Are you hosting a weekly or monthly Ethereum meetups? If this is the case, we will make sure to send you some money. That is no question asked. No strings attached. We don't even care if you, you know, put the name or not. This is not our goal. Our goal is just literally to help having gathering spaces. Places where people can go talk, discuss ideas around like blockchains at large. It doesn't have to be Ethereum per se. I would like it to be, but it doesn't have to be. So yeah, that's kind of what we're doing. That's kind of how the proceeds are going to be used. And then like maybe two last little nuggets, I guess, of information here. We're going to have, thanks to Superfizz for coining the term, we're going to have ice drops at launch. So everyone holding keys will be able to have a cliff airdrop of said meme coins. there's going to be some cool mechanics around this. We'll explain later on. But basically, it's an airdrop that is cliffed and vested. So, very simple.
How does one get this ice drop?
The ice drop is basically like if your key has been sold out, you are eligible for the ice drop. If your key is still not sold out, it needs to be sold out first. And if a token, if a key has no cap, then there's no ice drop eligible. There's also like, yeah, that happens for, you know, Garfeldo fellas or Lasagna. And then there's also like, I think one or two tokens with like just plain airdrop. So TBD. And then I guess like the last little nugget was regarding, I'm just blanking out here a little bit, but yeah. That's okay. For now, let's call it that way. Yeah.
All right. So let me jump in here and just put a bow on this. You fundraised $6 million. Out of that, 2% is going towards these public goods and also public spaces to incentivize basically community and goodness for everyone.
Goodness.
98% of it is going to go into liquidity pools for each respective 14 tokens across all these, you know, chains and whatnot. All right. Now, I, as a key purchaser, an NFT purchaser, and assuming I also run a complete validator, I'll take this NFT key. I would then go and pay the ID, which is 0.1 ETH, to register my validator with kind of Hieroglyph system. Now, at that point, I can start putting in the key that I want to mine with my validator, with the address that I want the rewards to go to. Now, every single block as I'm producing, I am not, note here, not adding to state bloat, because this is in the graffiti area, right? This is literally already there. So you're not adding anything new. And that's why you have to be creative to squeeze the name of your token into a ticker, right? Squeeze it to as small as possible, preferably one character.
Yep.
And now as every block happens, I'm mining this, and I'm accruing all of these tokens. Then I can take these tokens and go to these liquidity pools that are already on these individual chains and just go and, you know,
You can sell them, or even better than this. And, you know, like, this is something that I'm very keen to experiment with, because this was not possible back in the days. And that has been like some wish of mine that I've wanted for like, you know, 2+ years. You will be able to leverage a Ajna Finance Market, meaning that you will be able to borrow against your newly minted meme coin if you wish to. If you think, oh, you know what, I think this is potentially like more potential to run up potentially, or I want to edge my farming, I want to sell now in advance and whatnot, I will be able to borrow preemptively some, you know, of these tokens and sell them preemptively. Or, you know, again, like, you can take leverage up, you can short them, you can do whatever you want. And I've been seeing it so far being used on Blast already. Have you guys been hearing about the YES token or Baseline protocol?
Yeah, we had them on.
Yes.
Beautiful. So Ajna Finance was basically like used with YES protocol, and I think that was really cool to see kind of this experimentation. So we're going to see it with Hieroglyph again at launch too. And so this way, you know, validator, we assume, and that's going to be a very big gamble here, to be honest, are we going to see complete validator, so validator farm and dump, similar to like, you know, some of these kind of pool one kind of process back in the days, or are we going to see them potentially auto and, you know, like maybe bet on this, on culture? I think it's going to be very fun. And what is great is for some of these just, I guess, meme coin hunters or speculators, some of the tokens are actually way less skewed towards validators. So they will have, quote unquote, less to dump. So you will have to really investigate or scrutinize all the stats or, you know, like, characteristic of all these tokens and take the wisest decision yourself. So
I have a question.
Yep.
So the tokens and tickers and all that, they live in the graffiti.
No, so you will be able to claim them from a contract. So basically, okay. Like the distribution method is via graffiti, but the way it works is there's a contract where you can claim them from. And that's when they're kind of materialized on chain. So this way, instead of minting them every single block, you know, like for example,
the graffiti is a tool for distribution.
Exactly.
Okay. So distribute, and then it's distributed on chain.
There you go. Yeah. Because compared to Bitcoin, we already have beautiful token standard called ERC-20s, and they are not necessarily perfect, but they can solve a lot of our issues. They're pretty damn good.
Yeah. So Gavin instead of having to mint.
Gavin was cooking.
Instead of having to mint every single block, these graffitis that you include is almost like a block, a validator raising their hand and being like, hey, make sure you count me in. Okay. Hey, another block. So they keep on raising their hands. And then over time, until, you know, they accumulate enough badges, medals, which would then translate to badges, which would then translate to tokens. Right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. And that obviously reduces bloat because you're not doing it on every single block and you're just smashing it.
Yep. And again, like we're doing tokens for now, but you know, just keep in mind, like, and this is for the devs listening. I don't know how many devs are here. I assume it's more degens with DeFi Dave and Kit, but it's a playground. It's a playground. You guys can build anything that you want. And there's already people digging. We have like a Telegram group with over 60 devs, top tier devs, already cooking some stuff. You want launchpads, you want launchers.
What are they cooking?
You want cookie cutter like templates, you want, you know, NFTs, you want anything. Like literally, like people are already cooking some new stuff, and I think it's gonna be very exciting. And I think like this is literally just Genesis, right? It's just the phase two. It's just like the first things we're going to see, very stupid, very dumb. Like they're a little bit funny. The memes are funny a little bit, but that's it. So yeah, I don't think we have too much degen stuff, to be honest. Like these token, like liquidity pools are going to be locked and, you know, burned or whatnot. And that's it. That's all we have going on for now. I don't want to expend too much on phase three and phase four, phase five. But just stay tuned. I think we should do a part two for, you know, this podcast, and maybe come back whenever phase three or four is ready.
Yeah, 3 and 4 and beyond.
Let's go.
Something in my research was the first 14 Genesis tokens don't have a tax to them, but all tokens generated after do have a Harbinger tax of sorts. Is that correct? Can we go into that more?
Yeah, let's kind of dive into this real quick. So basically, like the protocol is enabling kind of revenues or, you know, profitability and kind of dynamics via this Harbinger tax, which is not used that much in crypto in general. Where this come from? For me personally, like it was implemented in the first way I saw it was Simon de la Rouvière, which from South Africa, did like, you know, this NFT, which is this artwork is not for is always for sale. Basically, like it just you can steal the ownership of the artwork by paying like some ETH, and basically like you keep it, and there's a tax in perpetuity for holding it. So you pay, I think for the artwork it's 5% per year. It's been running since 2019, I believe, and can you guess how much the creator has made from this artwork at the moment?
$69,000.
$69,000. What about you, Kit?
I was going to say $690,000.
So far he made around, I think it's 30 or 32 ETH since 2019. So got himself like his solo valor via just like this NFT experiment. And I think it's pretty sweet. And maybe potentially, I don't want to jinx it, but maybe potentially that is also like the way to solve the royalty problem for NFTs. Anyways. So what happened is every single tickers that people are buying to basically like distribute these meme coins or tokens or games or projects, they need to purchase them. And there's a tax every single block, it's preserved. It's Taken. And that's kind of how we do it. For the meme quest, for the Genesis keys, what we wanted to do is we didn't want to profit from it ourselves. We didn't want people to hijack them and potentially insert like malicious kind of smart contract, because this is something that is possible, by the way. Like anyone can hijack the tickers. So we made them kind of immune to hijacking. We made them free for people to, we're not profiting from it. And that was kind of the thinking over there. If you had like a normal tickers, you would be paying a tax. You could get hijacked. What happened when you get hijacked, just like very quickly, you're not losing the ERC-20 tokens, like the contract deployer and whatnot. No, it stays there. It keeps accumulating, but then you need to buy another ticker. Why would someone hijack your ticker? Well, the less characters there is in your ticker, the more people can stake them, the more profitable validators can be if they can nest multiple tickers. So single chart tickers have been already actually being purchased at the moment. What people are doing is they are resolving them to the current kind of longer Genesis ticker. So you see, like, the apes are quite smart actually, and they are, you know, leveraging exactly the, you know, the techniques that we were hoping they would do and basically leverage. So that's what's kind of is happening on this side. We also have the IDs that is basically like going into protocol revenues in ETH. And that is, I would say, how the protocol is self-sufficient or at least earning. And that is some of that money pays for the Gelato network kind of fees and whatnot. So yeah, there you go.
So let me just summarize that. Effectively, the protocol is generating revenue via two ways. One is the validator ID that costs 0.1 ETH to purchase. Yep. And second is the Harbinger tax that accrues almost a per block basis for the tickers.
Yep.
Okay. And the way, just to explain the hijacking a bit more, is right now there is the ticker Smokey for the Barra Chain token, right? Someone could literally buy another ticker with just the letter S. And that letter S can direct to, as a proxy, to the Smokey ERC-20 token. But correct, because it's only S versus S-M-O-K-E-Y, now you could put another token in this, like, you know, 28 character line, yes, instead, right? Because you only have 28 characters. Smokey is already a, what, 6-letter word. So that takes away, you know, 5 other coins that you could be merge mining. So that's exactly why single character takers are worth it.
More, right? Yeah, exactly. And right, and this is the same for ID. You can have an ID that is a single char, you can have an ID that mm-hmm. is multiple char, but then you will be losing kind of real estate, and you need to optimize this kind of this char real estate that you have out there.
Is there a harbinger tax for character counts? Is there a harbinger tax for the ID itself too? So 0.1
no,
ETH.
No. So the thing with IDs is we wanted the ID. So okay, that's a little rant on my end, but I know a lot of people are frustrated by the way kind of ENS, you can lose it, right? If you're not basically like paying attention, mm-hmm. and then basically like you forgot to repay it and whatnot, and someone hijack it, and then now they're keeping it for forever, or, you know, squatting on it or whatever. And, you know, like mm-hmm. it's pretty unfortunate. And ultimately, I think ENS is quite nicely kind of done and whatnot. But for IDs, what we decided to do is you want an ID, you resolve it to one wallet or one ENS, and this is it in perpetuity. It's a one-time fee. That's it. That's all. And for each, and potentially like in the future, if we're, you know, if the PMF is there and whatnot, like potentially this can be also like this ID can be supported by wallets. And, you know, instead of using .eth, now you can do at, you know, like maybe K, and there you go. This is going to be your wallet resolving to it. That's possible. But anyway, so we decided to do the same thing. You can put a ENS in there, a cluster, just a wallet. You can, if, for example, you lose the private key to your wallet, or, you know, you sell the ENS or whatnot, you can just buy another ID and that's it. You know, it's 0.1 ETH. Like at the moment, it is, I don't think it is that crazy to ask someone with 32 ETH to basically like chip in a little bit for the continuity of this protocol. And anyways, part of this revenues help directly like to fund this, you know, public goods and whatnot. So I think we're all aligned here.
Got it.
And so basically, if you're paying the Harbinger tax for these different characters, the thinking is you'll be earning more from basically mining, and then you can more use coins. What you mine. To, like,
you are not the one paying it as the validator.
Oh.
This is only the deployer, the ticker deployer, the token deployer. These are the people. So for example, like if they were to... Let's use something that I really hate from this new meta, but I do a pre-sale. Let's say I do a pre-sale. And, you know, I get 1,000 ETH by posting a wallet on X or Farcaster or whatever. Well, like, part of that 1,000 ETH, instead of just putting it into liquidity, I could just buy a ticker on Hieroglyph. Prime Real Estate 1. And there we have it. That would be the folks kind of basically like paying this quote-unquote tax.
Got it. So someone can come in and pay more and win that
exactly.
Over,
they can
right?
steal it. So, yeah, they can steal it. They can hijack it, and that's the fun of it.
So yeah. So you need to really be kind of vigilant and keep on paying, basically the highest bidder on the ENS every single block, right?
A beautiful game.
I wonder what the equilibrium of different tickers are going to look like.
I have no idea, and I'm very excited to find out. To be honest.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, because technically ticker A is just as valuable as ticker Z because it's just one character. But I feel like it wouldn't be like an even distribution in pricing. It would be, you know, like some people would hate the letter L. Nobody wants to take an L.
guys, I just want to specify. We not only support Roman letters, but we also support Hangul in Korean, Chinese, Hebrew, Russian. Arabic, and we all basically like U2F8. We have a bunch of characters from all basically like globalized. So yeah, it's gonna be cool. Multiple communities. This is a global kind of movement, sir. Whoa. You know, this is not limited to just like the Roman languages and letters. So yeah, we got like a bunch of one letters from everywhere, and we have some weird ones too. Anyways, so yeah.
That can get interesting.
Numbers are also supported. So there you go. It's going to be fun.
All right. Now let's get into the roadmap of Hieroglyphs. You guys are in the process of launching as we speak. Yep. When can people start and get into this? When can they start playing the game? When can they start mining? When can they start bidding for tickers? Like
mining was launched in the first phase, so just as you know, testing and whatnot, you couldn't redeem against anything. We had to, you know, put a break to it because of quote unquote like an attack or someone trying to game the system. We will be relaunching, if everything goes well, either today or tomorrow. So as we're recording this is already Friday? No,
it'll come out Friday.
Yeah, 23, 24 kind of May. And it should be pretty exciting. The ice drop is not going to happen this week. It's going to happen next week. And then, more details will basically like surface on blog posts. We're going to have, for everyone listening, like the initial blog post, launch blog post was 24 pages. And we had to basically like cut it down to 11, 13 to make sure that this was coherent and whatnot. There's some... The way we call it is game masters of kind of the coordination game are themselves like confused. Developers, the team is also confused by all the game and whatnot. It's some degen shit, to be honest. So
we've seen it. It is indeed some degen shit.
Yeah. So, but starting tomorrow, people will be able to basically like ape in, and hopefully we're going to have a very cool launch. I think people are going to love the kind of mystery and whatnot. There's also like already ints in the launch video for phase 3 that people can start decipher and hopefully give or win an advantage. And then, that's it. But again, remember one thing. I think it's the most important thing. Everything always starts on chain. So the people looking on chain always have advantage.
Always. I have one final question.
Go for it.
My favorite line from the white paper is, "The absurdity of our times mirrors the gravity of our challenges. What are the challenges we face? What happens if we face them successfully? But what happens if we don't face them?"
So Yeah, as I've mentioned previously, the problem that we're trying to solve might not cause us a huge problem today or tomorrow. In fact, centralizing everything makes everything easier, opens up different possibilities that makes everything efficient. But just like the fire alarm that only goes off when there's a fire, we'll only start to notice when there's a problem, when the problem actually becomes problematic. And I think what we're building is the defense against those centralizing forces in advance. So liquid staking actually offers a lot of convenience, and it has economic incentives. And with like restaking and other DeFi lending protocols or DeFi protocols that are integrating liquid stake tokens, I guess those are the biggest opportunity costs and hurdles for us, as we see. So there is a huge economic incentive. There is a huge economic incentive to centralize everything. And there is a huge economic incentive to achieve economies of scale of centralization. And what we need is to actually incentivize them to overcome these things, so that contributing to the decentralization of Ethereum does not only feel good, but actually pays off. So yeah, I guess you could say that our mission is to give users as much incentive as possible to solve problems together without opportunity costs, and to get people involved and without much hurdles. So there are usually two ways of solving the problem, two ways of like getting people engaged. One is lowering the entry barrier. One is incentivizing. So on the lowering the entry barrier side, we're collaborating with, like as Malky mentioned, different protocols, different services that actually help solo validators, or actually help those ETH holders to step up as a solo validator. So maybe that part would be the way we lower the entry barrier. And while we only mainly focus on the incentive part of solving the problem.
Got it. Thanks for that. I think that wraps up all the questions for the main part of the show. Kit, let's do the lightning round, but we'll do one question each. So you do one question, yep. And I do one question.
Okay, cool. So I would love to know, what was Maki's first virgin crypto experience? When did you first touch the blockchain, but sex doesn't count?
So buying on Shapeshift, ZRX.
Ooh.
And then transferring it to my on-chain wallet per se, which was I think it's MetaMask or Mist, I don't remember, one of the two, but you know, it was definitely not the MetaMask that we have right now. It was way more clunky. So that was my first virgin kind of crypto experience, and you know, withdrawing from a sex too, but you know, it's like purchasing on a sex Shapeshift. Yeah, there you go. So that's what's going on.
Gotcha. And then Glovin, how about you? What was your first virgin crypto experience?
Buying Doge.
On a sex, or how did you buy Doge on Doge?
On a sex.
That doesn't count. It can't be a sex.
Sex doesn't count. It has
sex
to touch
the blockchain. No, all this like intermediary process. Like at first, the process of buying the Doge was an on-chain experience, like swapping my ETH to other assets to find where Doge was, because I thought it was on Uniswap and Ethereum.
Oh.
So like the process of buying the Doge was my first on-chain experience, which I
That's so funny.
Had to go back to sex eventually, but yeah, that was
actually. Oh, so you mistakenly thought it was on Ethereum, not realizing it wasn't in ERC20.
You touched the ETH chain so you can go into a sex, so then you can buy the Doge. Okay, I like that. That was a good first time. All right, that's it on my end. Dave?
Yeah. My last question is, who would you recommend as a guest? Who do you want to see on the show? Maki, go first.
That's a good question. I don't know all the previous guests on Flywheel, to be honest with
Just
you.
Just name any.
Just name.
All right. I would like to hear from Mr. Brink. So the guy that does Amoeba, I think, Amoeba. The intent protocol on Cosmos. I would love to hear more about this fella, Adrian Brink. Yeah, there you go. That's the person I would like to hear more about.
Got it.
Noted.
Noted. Glovin, what about you?
I can't really think of any particular name at the moment. Maybe it would be great if we could see each other again on the next episode covering like the phase 3, 4, 5.
I guess I'll can I enter this one for and another one then for me I'll take his. I would like for you guys to invite Manny Rickon Cruz here, which is the co-author of Hieroglyph. He is an historian and he is probably one of the more knowledgeable fella in protocol design I've ever met with Glovin that is here with me. So that would be a pretty nice spot, I think.
I'm a historian, history nerd at heart, so I think I'd enjoy that one. Guys, where can people find you on social media?
Zerox Mackey on X, Farcaster, and Lens.
Glovin underscore on X. I'll probably create one in Farcaster pretty soon, and Hero underscore Gliss on X.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Hope to see you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the postgame. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K, finishing off an episode with Zerox, Mackey, and Glovin, covering everything you need to know about Hieroglyphs. There's a lot going on, but we broke it all down, and I think I got the gist of it now. It's basically using – now it makes more sense that graffiti is basically like a way – a better, more fair way to do distribution of tokens. Mm-hmm. So instead of just there being like a smart contract and there's like a pre-mine and this and that, it's like, nah, you gotta do the work. This is why in the white paper, there's this like hybrid proof of work. You gotta like, you know, get that, you know, the NFT ID, gotta like put on the complete validator, set everything up, do the work, and then you'll get minted the tokens. So I see what they're trying to do here.
Yeah. I finally also get it. Like the larger vision of it. And now I know the nuance of how it works. I wish we could have gave the audience a bit more cleaner cut. Maybe people can do some magic and like clip things together. Cause I feel like there are so many nuggets, but it's all spread out.
This is one that people will have to listen to twice. Sounds like.
I think so.
And it's people pretty cool. Yeah. We have the timing like on the day of launch, fingers crossed, So, where were you when Hieroglyphs came out and did you mint the NFT right away?
I did. I think I didn't, maybe not right away, but I probably did it like within a day or so. I was just at home. Unlike you, I'm not a globetrotter.
I'm home now. I'm in my, almost moved in apartment. Uh-huh. I've been traveling so much. I'm still haven't moved in my apartment. I'm just like, my God, I gotta just like just finish it over here. But you know, it's, I think what people underestimate and like don't realize is the possibilities with Hieroglyphs, because right now it's meme coins. Mackey hinted at NFTs, but you could put anything in the graffiti, you know. Yep. What's stopping, like, that's why he was encouraging like, hey devs, get a look at this, get a load here, you know, the sky's the limit. So I really like, but I see what they're doing one step at a time with the go-to-market. First, do meme coins. You know, that's what's hot right now. That's the meta. See how different communities of Revolve, you know, kind of coalesce around these meme coins. I'm sure you can get a hint of the distribution and supply based on the NFTs. So those with low NFT numbers, I'm sure we'll have a low supply. But we'll see. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. And then... you know, if the meme coin's successful, then we're going to have CNFTs and then off to the races from there.
Yeah, no, I think it adds a different type of primitive, you know, because it's putting into this new blocks. It's not really block space because it's on top of the block space. So it's kind of adding this new layer to it. Like you said, meme is just the first use case, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like what other you could do. You could put like intents up in there as well too, without having to put it into the block. But yeah, just, you know, as a dev, I'm sure people could think a lot about it. But yeah.
Yeah. We didn't get into this at all, but in the white paper, it uses the comparison to refining oil, which I find so funny because they call Ethereum digital oil. And so right now it's just like block rewards and graffiti. And right now people are just focusing on the block rewards. Back when you know, oil was first being refined, everyone was like refining kerosene for their lighting fixtures, and actually crude and like actual like gasoline was a byproduct and people threw it away. They didn't figure out that gasoline was valuable until the automobile came out. And then it became what we know and love today. And now there's like 6,000 different products refined from oil. So I think we're going to see the same thing here. First we have block rewards and graffiti. And now with graffiti, it's being refined into meme coins. Like, and soon we're going to see it refined into, who knows, like tens, hundreds, who knows what other use cases is going to be refined in this graffiti space.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, especially with someone like Maki leading. I think it's just going to be really, really cool.
A man of principle, a man of character. Yeah. Since the sushi swap days. But yeah, real excited for this one. If this is your first time listening and you're excited too, if you're excited about us and what we have cooking in store at Flywheel, make sure you go ahead and subscribe, hit that bell button, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like, make sure you follow us on all our social media on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. Follow us on Farcaster at Flywheel. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
Subscribe to flywheel.defi.com and we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.